Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Access Bank PLC HY 2021 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. For the participants on the webcast, please type your questions in the webcast question box. For the participants that dialed in, there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal for an operator by pressing star then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Herbert Wigwe. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Claudia, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're all welcome to Access Bank's half year 2021 earnings call. Let me start by thanking you all for dialing into our investor call. We have prepared a very detailed presentation highlighting all aspects of our business, which I'll be sharing with you right now. On the call with me today are Mr. Roosevelt Ogbonna, our Group Deputy Managing Director, Greg Ejiebome, our Executive Director in charge of Risk Management, Ade Bajomo, our Executive Director in charge of IT and Operations, Victor Etuoku, our Executive Director in charge of Personal Banking, Chizoma Okoli, our Executive Director in charge of Business Banking, Adiza Ambursa, Executive Director of Commercial Banking, Mr. Seyi Kumakwai, Executive Director, African Subsidiaries, and a few other people that constitute our bench of management talent. So far, 2021 has presented its own challenges, but I'm pleased to report that Access Bank has had a solid first half with robust revenues, profitability, and increased distribution to our shareholders. I'll briefly go over some of the key performance highlights, after which we will allow more than enough time for a question and answer session with you. Looking at the macroeconomic environment, over the last quarter, we experienced the highest GDP growth rate of 5.01%, signaling significant improvement in the economy, coupled with the reduction in inflation rates of about  17.8%. We have also experienced strong recovery in crude oil prices and treasury bills. As we reflect over the last 18 months since the start of the pandemic, there are signals that we are beginning to see economic recovery, and I think that we believe that this will enable us to achieve our financial year 2021 targets. As of June 2021, we have basically built up over 42 million unique customers and 50 million accounts. And this speaks to our increasing coverage and the scale of our franchise. Our digital footprint is strong and growing, with over 2,950 ATMs spread across you know, strategic locations in the country. We also have about 63,675 points of sale equipment and about 10.7 million mobile and internet banking users. Our USSD subscribers base also stood at about 6.5 million unique users. While the wide spread of branches in major cities and financial inclusion centers with about 729 branches and about 75,231 agent locations. This reflects the shared scale of our digital and physical presence in a bid to remain closer to our customers. Today, we are present in 11 African countries, the UK and the UAE, with three strategic representative offices in China, India, and Lebanon. On issues of diversity, rating, and recognition, which are important to us because of our sustainability ethos, gender diversity remains an extremely important subject for us, as you know. Our employee mix is almost an equal distribution of 53% male to 47% female as at the end of the period. Our risk ratings are reflective of our strong financial performance, with the risk rating capped by the rating of the sovereign, and we have maintained our risk ratings except for Standard & Poor's, which dropped because S&P downgraded Nigeria in 2020. We've also received several accolades in 2021 for some of the good job which the team has done. And some of these include Africa's Best Digital Bank from Euromoney, recognition for our strides in digital banking, deals executed in the agricultural space, and of course, the ones that we are particularly and extremely proud of, which are our CSR Sustainability Awards, and for the fifth time in a row, Access Bank was declared the winner of the Carl Shrew Award for Outstanding Business sustainability achievement. CASU tends to be the gold standard as far as issues around sustainability is concerned. Speaking more on our sustainability efforts and ensuring Access Bank runs in a sustainable manner, we have since embraced ESG as part of our lives, whether it is the diversity of our board or our workforce, or the work that we have done with respect to sustainable financing, and all of them, it is at the core of what we do. We are also today the only climate lending bank on the continent. Now, moving on quickly to our group financial highlights. Our gross earnings grew by 14% year on year to about 450.6 billion during the period, compared to about 396.8 billion in the corresponding period in 2021, comprising of 71% interest income and 29% non-interest income. Interest income was up by 30% year on year to 319.7 billion as a result of the increasing yield environment. The key contributors include: 1. A 79% year on year growth in income from our investment securities book to 132.2 billion compared to 74 billion in the half year of last financial year, and this was due to the improved yield environment and the fact that our investment securities book had grown, and a 9.9% yield in interest on loans and advances to customers, which grew to 182.4 billion compared to 167.3 billion in the corresponding period of last year. This basically offset a 4% decline in interest income from cash and cash equivalents to 5.2 billion. The decline was driven by downward repricing of placements generally in the marketplace. Our non-interest income fell by 13% year on year to 130.9 billion from 150 billion in the corresponding period in 2020, and this was largely as a result of the significant drop in our net trading income and other operating income. At a starting point, there was a 41% decline in our net trading income to 40.7 billion from 68 billion in the corresponding period in the last period, and this was as a result of the Naira devaluation. And of course, and secondly, there was a 45% drop in our other operating income to 16 billion. Again, this was underlined by the reduction in recoveries from written loans, from written off loans. I mean, if you look at it properly, coming through the acquisition of Diamond, most of the bad loans that can be recovered have been recovered. And so what we are now beginning to see is a tapering up in terms of the recoveries. We also saw a 42% increase in commission on fees to 73.7 billion naira compared to 51.8 billion in the corresponding period of last year. And again, this is coming from the increased transaction velocity across our channel and e-business, and also some credit-related fees and commissions. We will continue to gain traction on our income from these lines as we extend our retail and loan offerings. Our retail banking business has seen consistent and continue to witness significant growth driven by strong focus on consumer lending, payments, remittances, digitization of customer journeys, and customer acquisition on a large scale. We are focused on generating sustainable revenue across all lines. All aspects of our business continues to grow or to show significant improvement because Access Bank is now more digital than ever before. Our retail commissions have increased by about 27% per annum over the last 3 years, while digital banking revenue increased by 63% over the same period. We have continued to see resilient income with improved margins. Our yield on assets increased by 80 basis points, driven by the improved yield on government securities. This increase, coupled with the decline in our cost of funds by 80 basis points, led us to create an optimal and low-cost deposit base, well, came from a low-cost and optimal deposit base and helped us to improve our net interest margin. Our net interest margin increased by 157 basis points to stand at 6.4%, and our loans continue to improve with moderation of our cost of funds. We expect that with all of this, moving into the rest of the year, we should begin to see better NIMs. Our operating expenses were up 9% year-on-year to 189.8 billion compared to 174.3 billion, and this was well below the inflation rate. The growth we are seeing is driven by the recent acquisitions made over the past 12 months in Zambia, Kenya, South Africa, and Mozambique. But if you look at the bank level, our operating expense was flat And this is in spite of the increased regulatory costs, I mean, coming from the AMCON fees and premium, as well as depreciation and amortization expenses. So at bank level, it remains flat, but the increased acquisitions which we have done, which were not present in the previous year, basically showed this, slight increase in our operating expenses. Our cost-to-income ratio has shown increasing improvements, with a slight decline of 570 basis points to 60.1% compared to 65.8% in the corresponding period of last year. While our cost of risk at 1.4% is in line with the bank's guidance for the year. Looking at our balance sheet, we continue to grow and improve our deposit mix with deliberate low-cost deposit mobilization. As of June 2021, customer deposits closed at 5.98 trillion, which was basically a 7% year-to-date growth from 5.59 trillion in December 2020. Our CASA deposits, our current and savings account deposits, account for 62% of the total customer deposits, reflecting our increased retail presence, leveraging on our innovative digital platform and financial inclusion. Total savings account deposits closed at 1.37 trillion as at the period end. And this basically is reflecting a growth rate of 44% per annum over the last 4 years or last 3 years. Our subsidiary customer deposits stood at 1.73 trillion, accounting for 21% of the group's total deposits from customers, with the main contributors being Access Bank Ghana and Access Bank UK. Our net loans and advances stood at 3.99 trillion as at June 2021, which was up 11% from 3.6 trillion in December 2020. The growth witnessed was as a result of our deliberate and increased core loan growth while mitigating concentration risk. Our foreign currency exposure dropped by 390 basis points year to date to 22% of the total loan portfolio in the year. And this is because we are deliberately seeking to mitigate our currency risk. The group's asset quality remains under check as our NPL ratio stood steady at about 4.3% compared to the same in the same period, in the corresponding period of last year. Our provisions are the highest in the industry, driven by a conservative perspective to risk. We are not particularly thrilled with our current NPL ratio, although they are the lowest that we can see in the industry. And at the bank level, if you strip out Access Bank UK, for instance, our NPL ratio is about 2.6%. So I think the results were affected by some of the increased provisions which we had to take in Access UK, coming from some of the structured trade issues that came out of COVID. The key sectors responsible for NPL ratio are general commerce, manufacturing, and then real estate activities. We consider this level sustainable and do not expect further deterioration in asset quality. Our capital adequacy ratio was about 21.3% on an adjusted impact basis based on the regulatory transition arrangement, while our liquidity ratio closed at 50.7%, and these are well in excess of the regulatory minimum that have been set. Our subsidiaries have continued to grow and make significant contributions to the group. Subsidiaries' contribution to the group's performance stood at 36%, recording total subsidiaries' PBT of 35.5 billion. The same period last year, what they basically turned out was about 26.1 billion. The UK and Access Bank Ghana accounted for 86% of total, half year 2021 subsidiaries' PBT, with a return on average equity of 17% and 26% respectively. All our subsidiaries, excluding Sierra Leone, recorded a decline in their cost of income ratios year on year, buttressing the impact of our effective cost-cutting measures across the group. With respect to financial inclusion and lending, we continue to deploy resources to reach the underbanked and unbanked through our agency banking network, leveraging digital technology. We have about 5.6 trillion naira transaction values recorded from agency banking transactions from about 75,000 agents. Our transaction value on our digital channels grew significantly by 52% year on year to get to about 20.9 trillion compared to about 13.7 trillion in the same period of last year. And this was driven by significant growth on our mobile banking with the deployment of Access More application. In terms of our outlook and financial targets for 2021, we remain committed to driving an effective and sustainable business growth by intensifying efforts to improve our asset quality, to increase transaction banking income by migrating our customers to alternative channels, and creating strong awareness of our flagship retail products. We will intensify our low-cost deposit drive to reduce funding costs, thereby enhancing our liquidity and margins, and making us basically come to the same level of CASA to total deposit ratios as some of our competitors. We will enhance productivity across our branches and staff and extract value from our existing accounts, and of course reduce operating costs by aggressively executing strategic cost-saving initiatives. With market realities, our financial year 2021 guidance remains as follows. We will achieve a return on equity greater than 20%. Our NPL ratio will remain far less than 5.5% as we've given before. Our cost to income ratio will fall again further below 60%. Our capital adequacy ratio shall remain greater than 20%. Our loan to deposit ratio should be about 65%. Our cost of risk, again, less than 1.5%. Liquidity ratio should be about or slightly higher than 50%. And we will expect our net interest margins to be well above 5%. We are confident in the momentum that we've built and are excited about delivering on our ambition of being the world's most respected African bank. Again, I want to thank you also very much, and we will now be opening our lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. For the participants that dialed in, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then two to remove yourself from the list. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. And just another reminder for the participants on the webcast, if you'd like to ask a question, please type your questions in the webcast question box. We will pause to see if there are any questions. The first question comes from Tajuddin Ibrahim from Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for the call and congratulations on your numbers. I just have, one major question, and it speaks to your plan and strategy around fintech. I know that, we have seen a lot of investments flow into fintech businesses. And most of these fintech businesses have enjoyed robust valuation, in billions of dollars. And I'm like, you have a very robust customer base, even more robust than most of these fintech companies. And your valuation is nowhere close to where they are stealing deals in that segment. So it would be useful, in my view, if you can let us know what you think about the fintech business generally and what probably your plan is. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there any other question from Tajuddin?
That's all for now, please.
Okay. Maybe we should answer that and then we'll take the next question. Well, thank you very much, Tajuddin. As you are aware, we will be evolving sometime next year into a holding company structure. And that will allow us to basically get into other non-bank financial sector, verticals, if you like. We will come out with our own response to that whole industry on payments and all. But let me quickly say that we don't see fintechs, we see them as competitors, but we also will collaborate with them. So it's not something that we are worried excessively about. But we've also seen that they are attracting great valuations through the different funds raised that they've all done. But for us, what is more important is we will create real value at the time at which we're doing it. We have a head start in terms of the massive platform that we have. We already have 50 million customers who can basically create significant value or benefit from whatever we want to do in that whole space. And in our own case, it will be a real value. It will not be evaluations based on fluff or anything of the sort, or anticipated income. They will see the real value from day one. So I think as we evolve into that space sometime next year, you will then see Access Bank's response to that sector. And we're pleased with the participants and what they're doing out there. But I think that we will basically help in redefining that whole sector and making sure that from a compliance standpoint and how the regulators see that sector, that it should be done differently. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Toyosi Oni from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Toyosi.
Hi, team, and thank you very much for speaking to us today. My first set of questions are...
Toyosi, I'm so sorry to interrupt you. Would you mind just speaking up or speaking closer to your device just so that we can hear you?
Is this better?
That's much better. Thank you, ma'am.
All right, thank you. So I was saying thank you very much for the team for hosting this call. My first set of questions are around your margins. So I wanted to understand what drove the growth in interest income from financial assets at fair value OCI to 73 billion in half year 2021 from 22 billion last year. I also noticed that there was a 14% year-to-date growth in your term deposits. I wanted to ask, what is driving this? And just on that line also, we saw a 40% spike in your interest expense quarter-on-quarter. I wanted to ask what was also driving this and what rates you are currently offering on your purchase funds. And then just to wrap up the questions on margins, generally across the industry, we've seen a decline in margins at the other banks, but Access bucked this. I wanted to ask if you could speak to us on your strategy here and the trends you're seeing going into the rest of next year. My next question is on asset quality. So we saw the growth in your impairments year on year, and if I heard correctly, you attributed this to the issues with Access Bank UK. I wanted to ask on an update on the agro-processing names that you alluded to at your full year 20 call and ask how these are performing now or if this is what is driving, you know, the increase in impairments that we've seen again this reporting season. My next question is on your non-interest revenue. Could you please talk us through your trading gains? Because they do look a bit volatile, especially when we look at it on a year-on-year basis. So if you could just walk us through what's happening there and the trends that you expect going into next year. My last question is on strategy, and that sort of piggybacks on the questions that Tajdeen asked on fintech. So we saw that you increased your stake in eTransact to 23% in this reporting period from about 5% before. I wanted to ask why. Is this in line with your holdco strategy? How are you looking at the payment space? And if you're able to just generally shed more color on what was driving that move from Access. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Toyosi. I would get Sheikh Umapai to speak on the issues around margins, the growth in interest income, the 14% growth in term deposits, and the 40% spike in interest expense in the last quarter, and how it will play out in the rest of the year. Then I will get Greg Jobome to speak to issues of asset quality. Shay would also speak to our trading income and the suggested issues of volatility, and then I will speak to the issue of strategy. So Shay, you want to? Yes.
Thank you, Chelsea. I'll pick up on the issue of the interest income. So if you look at the breakdown of that portfolio, you see that investment securities accounted for about 79% of the growth that you're looking at, from 74 billion in 2020 to about 132. And it's a combination of two factors. So between June 2020 and June 2021, that portfolio grew about 40%, so about from about 1.6 trillion to 2.2. So that's one factor. The other factor is the yield on that portfolio. The yield on that portfolio as at December was around 11%, even while the market was about near zero. So in December, if you look at how we arranged our portfolio, so it's a combination of fair value to P&L, fair value to OCI, and fair value to amortized cost. Now, in December, we had about $1 trillion of that in fair value to OCI. So clearly, that's what resulted in the OCI gain of about $58 billion that you saw in 2020. As we moved through the first half of the year, a lot of this instrument that matured, and that's what, you know, went through P&L that you saw significant growth in the in interest income. Now, if you also look at the other comprehensive income, you also see that there's a reversal, which essentially, you know, what has happened is that following the maturity of those bills, all right, they've gone into P&L and they've been reversed from OCI. So really, it's a combination of two things, like I said, the growth in that portfolio and the yield on that portfolio that we carry that Access Bank. In terms of margins, if you look at our margins grew from about, I think, 5% to about 6.4% for the half year. And clearly it's coming from the significant yield that we've seen on this portfolio, as well as the cost of funding. So if you look at our cost of funding has come down to about 2.9% at the end of July. So it's, you know, yield on assets, you know, that, about 10.5%, and the reduction in cost of funding is what was driving the margins that you see. How it's going to play out for the rest of the year? Clearly, we've seen pressure on funding costs, given what has happened to treasury bills, government securities in the market, and therefore we expect that today we're about 3.5% in terms of cost of funding, and that's where we expect that we'll be able to carry through. So we want to try and hold the margins at the level that it is today, and in line with what we projected, to keep this at about greater than 5%, more like 6%. That's what we are looking at, you know, for the rest of the year. I will speak to the issue of the trading income. Now, if you look at our trading income portfolio, and as we explained to you, you have to look at it as an aggregate, so between the derivative as well as the FX. So what typically happens is that when a transaction is in flight, I mean when an instrument is active, what you typically find is that the income on that is valuation. Now, when that instrument matures, all right, it goes into exchange earnings. It becomes a spot transaction. Therefore, whatever you then see a reversal on the derivative side. So you need to look at both of them together when you are looking at the and what you've also done. As part of in December, if you look at the financials, we also started to do some hedge accounting to take out some of the volatility, you know, coming through from devaluation or FX adjustment. So really, that's how you have to look at it. You have to look at the book together. The portfolio hasn't changed. You still have about $2.4 billion dollars in swaps. It's just a question of timing when the instruments mature, you know, when you do rollover. So that's what creates, but you know, you have to look at the two derivatives are going to exchange to come together to see what's happening there. In terms of what we see for the rest of the year, we don't expect to see much changes. We think that, you know, that number will be maybe between 15 to 20 billion, you know, on a quarter and quarter basis in terms of what you see on that line, on the aggregate line, on the trading side.
Thank you. Greg, you want to speak to the issue around asset quality?
Thank you, Herbert. Yes. So basically, you are right. Quite a bit of the additional impairment in this period has come from the UK business, as was described earlier on in the year. You know where we're coming from. We had the Diamond Book 2019 came from 10.8% NPL ratio. And we've steadily worked that down through a combination of a very proactive restructuring where it makes sense and the cash flow supported it, and also some write-offs. So through all of that process, we also did some conversions to ensure that customers did some conversions to ensure that they're able to manage the store in Naira rather than in dollars. So all of that has meant a very steady reduction in our NPL ratio. And you would have seen, if you took Nigeria alone, like Herbert said, would have seen probably 2.5-2.6%. Now, the UK issue is obviously a one-off, COVID-related. the ceiling of that we have reached, so there's not going to be any additional coming out of that. The recovery process, we also described it on the last call, which is over a 12 to 15 month period. Some of the recoveries have already started trickling in. So we've seen the worst of that, basically, because I would expect to see significant improvement in the UK's asset quality as we go forward, and therefore in the overall group NPA ratio as well. Thank you.
So, Tulsi, just like I mentioned initially, I mean, we are not excited by our current NPA ratio, even though it appears to be the lowest in the industry. But like Greg said, as we resolve the issues in the UK, we don't expect it to worsen. We expect that our NPA ratio should go down to the traditional 2.5% and lower. But speaking to your last question around our investment in eTransact, let me quickly say that about 15 years ago, we took a position that we're going to be very active in the entire payment space. So not just eTransact, we also have a strong presence in all the switches in the country. And it was a strategic decision we took at that time. Now, again, in this last five-year corporate strategic plan, we had said and shared with the market the fact that we want to be known as Africa's gateway to the world, which means that we must also start taking a more serious look at, you know, that whole payments environment down to the switches, and if it is possible, consolidate and have significant holdings to help drive a strategy around that whole space. So eTransact came to the market to raise money, and we decided to increase our stake, and that's where we are today. And if it's possible to take it up a bit more, we will, so that we'll be more involved in driving strategy and making sure that we have a very, very strong presence as far as the whole payments industry is concerned. Thank you very much. Next question.
Toyosi, does that address everything?
Yes, thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ronak Gaudia from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead, Ronak.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation and taking my questions. Mine, firstly, is just a follow-up to one of the answers from the previous questions. This is with regards to the asset yields. You know, I think Shay, if I heard it correctly, I think mentioned that as of December, the bank was earning a yield of around 11% on the investment securities portfolio, whereas, you know, market yields were close to 0%. So if you could just highlight how that was achievable. And also on that, you know, now that portfolio has been rolled over, if we look at the market-wide yields, you know, yes, they have recovered from where they were in Q1, but they're still probably, you know, in the single digits, maybe low single digits. So just trying to understand, you know, how the bank is still able to achieve such high yield. You know, by my estimates, the yield that the bank achieved in 2Q was about 13%, which is much, much higher than current market rates. So just trying to understand, you know, how that is achievable. And then the second question is on your borrowings. On a quarter-on-quarter basis, we saw a pretty substantial increase. I think there was more than 50% in interbank borrowings increased by about 50% or more. Just trying to understand why such a significant pickup, because if you look at the liquidity ratio, you know, the liquidity ratio is quite strong. The loan-to-deposit ratio is quite relatively low. So just trying to understand why the bank needed to raise such significant borrowings given the liquidity on the balance sheet. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronak. Let me try to answer those questions very quickly. I'm sure you appreciate that we have quite a significant swap book with the sovereign. And so the yields on the swap bills that were given that matured were about 11%. Some of it has been rolled over. A significant portion of it was rolled over in the first quarter, and the rest will be rolled over in the final quarter. And so those bills attract a bit more generous yields than you see in the traditional, in normal treasury. So these UMO bills attract a bit more richer yields than normal. Now, with respect to the borrowings that grew, those borrowings were largely around trade, and they were used to support our large trade book. You know, which is for some of the large multinationals we have in the country, that are basically trying to fulfill some of the big orders. So all you have seen there, in terms of borrowings were largely trade related, quite frankly. So that's basically what it is. Thank you. And what you also find is that, as you have these borrowings coming, the obligors, or rather the guys who are using it for the trade, would tend to start building up their naira book, all right, to ensure that we get bids from the central bank at all. So part of what you start seeing is the significant build-up in our current and savings balances as we move through the year, and of course as we fulfill those orders through our bids at the central bank. So that's what those borrowings were used for. Thank you very much, Rona. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, but this is as a follow-up on the yield question. So you said, you know, partly that yield is because of the yields that you achieve on the swap portfolio. You know, going by what Shay mentioned earlier, the swap portfolio is about $2.4 billion. That's about a trillion naira, give or take. The total investment portfolio at the end of the first half was about 2.4 trillion. So even if, you know, even if you're achieving yields of 11-12% on the OMOs from the swap, I would imagine the yield on the rest of the portfolio would be quite low, and therefore the overall yield should be much lower than 11%. So still, you know, still struggling to understand how the bank overall achieved a yield of around 11% for the first 6 months and around 13% for the second quarter.
Well, it depends on how the bills are the maturity of the bills that we're getting, all right? And for the first 6 months, in fact, in the first quarter, we had quite a lot of them actually, you know, rolled over, all right? And I think those initial bills were probably yielding about 13%, that kind of interest rate, all right? And so that is why you see it a bit elevated, all right? You're going to see the same kind of thing run through as we get towards the end of the second half of the year. So that's basically where it's coming from. All right, so it's about 13.5% that we've been able to achieve as far as most of those bills are concerned.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right,
thank you. The next question comes from Damilola Olupona from Chapel Hill Denham. Please go ahead, Damilola.
All right, thank you very much. Please confirm that you can hear me.
We can hear you.
All right, thank you very much. I had technical issues, so I didn't join the call very late. So pardon me if my questions are repetitive. First of all, I would like to seek clarity around your changes. I mean, the changes in, in your OCI. I can see that the changes in the fair value or financial instrument, you made a loss. That's coming from a profit of about 5 billion, you know, reported in the prior year. So I don't know if you can shed more light on this. And secondly, I also want to find out about the CBN's policy response to COVID. So I understand that last year, one of the key measures put in place was the CBN allowed banks, you know, to grant moratorium to troubled sector. How much of that has resulted in the lower NPLs you've reported? And I also noticed that in your NPL books as well, you reported NPLs, you know, from the transport segment. I also saw some NPLs, you know, coming through from the downstream oil and gas sector as well. Can you just shed some light as to how your NPL has evolved, you know, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and the areas we should be looking at, you know, going forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Damilola. Shay will speak to the changes in OCI again. And then Greg, our Chief Risk Officer, will address the questions with respect to the CBN policy response, with respect to COVID, and the transformation of our NPLs, you know, over the last quarter. Over the last 6 months.
Right. Thank you, Damilola. Just to speak to the issue of OCI. So if you look at in December 2020, you will see a gain of about 58 billion, which essentially spoke to the amount of the portfolio that we are carrying OCI. Now, what has happened subsequent to that is that those instruments have matured, and on maturity, alright, that income has moved to P&L, and there's a reversal of that from OCI. So it's just a movement, you know, where we were in December vis-à-vis that the fair value through OCI portfolio and where we are now, given that a lot of those instruments have matured. And so if you booked a gain in OCI, once the instrument matures, what you find is that, you know, it typically just goes back into a P&L and then is reversed from your OCI. So that's why you see that movement.
Okay, and with respect to the forbearances, I think we've shared this everyone in previous calls. So the central bank's policy was very much aligned to the global standard setters, IFRS 9 treatment as well, which is that names should not be stage migrated just because of the COVID impact on them. So CBN actually adopted that implicitly. So what that means is that from an Access Bank perspective, the names that were given forbearance were only names that were in stage one and a few names that were in stage two. So no name that has a challenge pre-COVID is included in our forbearance book. So that conservative treatment means that there is no expectation that any of them will become NPL other than in the ordinary course of the evolution of their lives as borrowers based on the cash flows of their sector on an ongoing basis. So just to repeat, there is no expectation that out of forbearance, there will be an assumed migration into stage three. And the reason for that, like I said, is how they were selected. In the case of Access Bank, the focus on names that were performing in their own right beforehand. Now, the sectors were the things that drove the selection. So not so much the individual borrower. So if the borrower was in a sector that pre-COVID was seen to, this sector is going to be heavily impacted by COVID. Therefore, let it be in that bucket. It is performing, we'll put it in that bucket. Potentially could be affected. But as it turns out, for Nigeria, we did weather the storm reasonably well, so far. And, many businesses, you know, sprung back into action, soon after the lockdowns were a bit short-lived. So many of them are paying in, their collections are coming in, building up these drafts towards repayment. So really, they have not given us a cause for concern. Like I said, can any of them become NPL in the future? Of course. But that will be in the ordinary course of business, as you would expect. So we don't expect an automatic evolution into NPL from that. Now, in terms of our overall NPL trajectory and the different sectors, over the last few years, since we did the Diamond Bank transaction, it has been driven largely by the proactive stance that we took, ensuring that more and more of our borrowers are in Naira as opposed to dollars, because that is what is helping a lot of them. Even right now, as I speak, they would have been struggling with a significant load of Naira equivalent exposures to carry at a very, very steeply devalued Naira. Therefore, those proactive actions have really helped us. The same thing that we did even in the last crisis, 2015, precisely the same thing. So our loan book at about 22% in foreign currency means that it is reasonably protected well into the future against currency shocks. And that was done deliberately, and it's one of the reasons why the NPLs remain where they are, relatively low. Now, with respect to the sector movements you will see now, they are more around names that had challenges pre-COVID, and pre all of this, one or two from the old Diamond Bank, which were now impaired. So you'll see a few impairments in one or two sectors, like the ones that you mentioned, one downstream, there's one in real estate, there's one in transport. All of those are pre-COVID names, which we are now treating as in the course of business. So nothing to do with the current market and current trajectory based on COVID. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope that answered your questions. Or does answer your
yes.
questions.
Yes, it does.
Thank you. We have no further questions on the audio line at the moment. Herbert, can I hand over to you for questions from the webcast? Okay, you may proceed with questions from the webcast, sir.
And this comes from Ngozi Odu. Speaking to the bank's asset to revenue ratio, Are there any plans for the bank to cut down on its physical branches owing to multiple branches in the same location since the acquisition of Diamond Bank? And I think the straight answer is that we are currently at what we refer to as an efficient level of branches and that we're not cutting down much more. Our customer engagement has been both physical and digital. Given the sheer size of Nigeria and the customers that we intend to speak to, we think that there is an optimal number of branches to be had at this particular point in time, and I think we have that number. The rest of what we do shall be done digitally, in terms of reaching customers and engaging them. The next question is from Tunde Abidoye. Could you please elaborate on the drivers of NPLs for general commerce, which has climbed rapidly to 34.8% from 15.9% at the end of December 2020? You also appear to have decreased specific provisioning coverage for stage 2 and stage 3 loans, which fell from to approximately 6% from 12% as of December. Could you add some color to this? Again, the general commerce is as a result of the forex shocks to mid-sized companies and trading companies from devaluation. The provision is very robust with a coverage of about 86% across stages. And for the stage 3, I think we have as much as 106%. The provision also done in the first half is about 57 billion, which is, I think, probably about half of what we did in the previous year, or perhaps a bit more. And basically, you know, this was accounted for as a result of the coverage, decline in the coverage ratio. Abdulaziz, my question is about your target of revenue from the subsidiaries for the next 3 years, if we can share. Abdulaziz, I think over the next five years, my expectation is that we should be generating about 35 to 40% of our revenues from subsidiaries. And this is going to be very significant. And I'm talking of not just within Africa, I'm talking of outside of Africa, so the UK and its subsidiaries. Now, if you imagine the size of the parent, it means that the subsidiaries have to be doing extremely well, all right, for them to be able to provide this level of contribution. Jerry Nnebue asked a series of questions. Your interest income was impressive compared to that of other banks. Can you please throw more light? I think Shea spent a lot of time on that. What did you do differently? And how much of that came from ex-Nigeria operations? You attributed the 41% decline in net trading income to Naira devaluation. Can you expand further? Do these relate to the unwinding of swap positions? What's your current swap position? I think we've spoken to that. How would you assess the traction from your Pan-African exposure? The argument is that you are very aggressive on that front and the rewards may take longer to materialize. Are you beginning to see the fruits already? What's the update on Holdco? And then what's your view on the proposed e-Naira and applications for your digital payments business? Okay. I think the first two questions have been addressed largely. With respect to Holdco, we will share a bit more information with you as we get to the end of the financial year, but it will be sometime in the second half of next year. With respect to e-Naira, we see very significant opportunities, and our regulator is taking a welcome lead and joining several other nations in launching a central bank digital currency. We've seen clearly that for the Nigerian population that have really accepted our cryptocurrency in recent years, which came with significant volatility, risk, limited payments, applications, and lack of transparency, that they will basically like this initiative. The e-Naira obviously is a stable coin on a regulated market, which gives it significant credibility. It's targeted at retail and mass markets and will provide low cost payment tool. But, you know, just like cash, it does have its own risks. In terms of the implication for banks, it depends on how the central bank basically comes out as far as its rules are concerned and what you can use it for. And the extent to which it's going to be applied. But like we said, it's very early days yet. I think over the next 6 months, it will be clearer what the regulators have in mind. We have our own views as to how It should be structured, even just taken out from the more developed markets, but we would work with the regulators to make sure that what we do is optimal and is appropriate for a developing market. Then we have from Ayo, dividend projection full year 2021. Ayo, our dividend policy is very clear. It is a residual dividend policy. We try to make sure that we achieve specific dividend yields, and I think we are far in excess of that yield. We try to make sure that we also have sufficient retentions to cover our capex. That's actually the first rule, and then the dividend yield, and then we'll take it from there. So I think, you know, given what we've just done now, which is a telecover dividend, we will basically run our models to check what needs to happen in terms of retentions. The capital adequacy requirement is also a critical point for us to make sure that, you know, at all points in time, we have more than enough capital to support the business we are doing from an ICRA standpoint, and particularly given the nature of our institution and size of our institution and relevance to the Nigerian market. So all of those things will be taken into consideration. So I'm not in a position to share with you right now the specific dividends that we're looking at, you know, with respect to this financial year. Average duration of the USD loan book, and how does it compare to average duration of our USD deposits? Let me just say that in terms of our duration, and if you spend time to understand how we've raised money in the bank, tenor is somewhere between 3 and 5 years outstanding. So in terms of duration, I would say it's about 2.5 years to 3 years. Particularly given the fact that we raised some money, even though it's for trade for a much longer period, in the more recent past. So I think about 2.5 to 3 years would be actually proper duration, or maybe slightly less, you know, but that's the kind of number that we currently see. Next question. Can't see any more questions. Okay. Wale Okoriboye asked a couple of questions. It speaks to the trading numbers, I think, which you've addressed. It speaks to the NIM outlook for 2021 and asked about higher rates or cheaper funding costs. And then the third question, it speaks to, it raises on fines and penalties. Can we comment on the FX infractions on fines? There is something about violating FX rules between 2013 and 2020 and the fines on diaspora remittances. What was the issue? And then what are the plans for our pension custody business? Are we okay with our current market share? I think the first two questions were addressed. The NIM was a bit tapered, and the simple reason, I mean, apart from the fact that we brought down our cost of funds and all of that, was just as we said in the course of the presentation, we were able to make sure that there was conversion of foreign currency loans to local currency loans at interest-neutral pricing. The idea is just to make sure that we don't find ourselves in a situation where we carry significant currency risks as far as our loan book is concerned. On the CBN FX infractions, some of them had to do with things that we inherited from Diamond. Secondly, we also have a few situations of people using their cards, all right, and being charged pricing that was beyond the normal CBN rate. And the idea was to make sure that people don't go and use their cards indiscriminately, all right, to basically withdraw dollars offshore and sell in the local market and all of that. So we tried to make it a bit more expensive, but that was the principal reason why those fines did come. Our pension custody business, I think we will continue to grow. We are okay with it. In terms of the current position, as you know, we inherited it from Diamond. It's been repositioned and it will grow. We will push the market share as far as we can possibly do. But it is growing and becoming more and more profitable. Tosi from FBN Quest. Access Bank Guinea expected to start operations in half year 2021. It has started operations. And, you know, our expectation is that it will actually break even this year, certainly. They started on a very good note. We are aware that the fact that there is a little security issue out there in that country as at this particular point in time, but it could happen in any West African country, by the way. But I think as far as Access Bank Guinea is concerned, you know, they started on a good note, and I think they will actually break even this year. That speaks to all the questions that have been raised. Let me once again thank everybody who's been on this call for joining us, and we look forward to a later call, which I think comes at the end of our financial year. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.